So we'll start these interviews soon. And I'm just interested in how you're doing, basically. If you have any questions or... But if you have any complaints, you have to talk to Venerable Tita Vijaya. I'll sort that out for you. Just some more reflections on what we might be doing here. If you consider how you develop interest, you're stimulated by life in some way. So if you like to read books, if you like to read a novel and you find a really riveting storyline, the novel grabs your attention, you can't put it down. So your attention is stimulated by something. If you enjoy basketball, your energy stimulated by the game and the movement. If you even responsibility, if you have to answer emails, a bunch of emails come and you look at them and you answer them and so on. So normally in life we're stimulated by events and objects and such like, people and situations, even if the stimulation is negative. But here we're not stimulated in the same way. I mean, sometimes you're stimulated by pain and things like that, but we don't have objects of interest. We don't have things that we're absorbing into. So we have to bring up energy from our own resources, not because things are exciting, but because we want to be present with the way things are and understand. And that's probably a more difficult proposition, isn't it? It's more difficult to do that. And that's why sometimes people can be really absorbed into an interesting internet documentary on Buddhism and think, well, that's, I'm watching Buddhism. And then as soon as they sit down, they fall asleep. Right? So like watching things as a kind of, you're participating in someone else's energy, as it were, produce that. But now you're participating in your own energy, have no kind of stimulation that way. So it's more difficult. But if you think about it, now you're bringing up energy from your own resources. So you're developing paramita. You're developing like virtuous qualities. So just the what we call virya, energy, that you're able to bring up energy by what? By being with a posture, by investigating, by noticing the breath and such like. That's more enduring than being stimulated by an object. So you can be stimulated by a fascinating book, but then that, as soon as the book goes, you're gone, as it were. So this is difficult. This is not easy. So you have to, I think, constantly encourage yourself to not kind of be too harsh on yourself to expect kind of great results, but to be determined, and then just trust that intention and the constant willingness to participate in this starts to build up a kind of a strength. So you begin to have like vitality in the practice, a vitality of being able just to stay in the moment with the way things are. And so once you understand how to bring vitality into consciousness, then you're able to see the restlessness of the mind, the distractedness of the mind, how the mind has its likes and preferences and obsessions. And through that kind of vitality of attention, you begin to have the capacity to let go of these kinds of negative involvements, these kinds of obsessions and so on. And because you now have the vitality to pay attention, and you begin to see how the mind works, and you begin to understand what letting go is, you begin to see, say, the difference between letting go and getting rid of. Maybe you see that letting go is also letting be. That's a curious one, because letting go sounds like you're getting rid of, but like, just speaking of that example last night of my friend who suffers from loneliness, she she observes loneliness and she lets loneliness be just as it is, neither getting caught in the thoughts, in the lonely thoughts, nor rejecting it. So letting go is also letting be in a strange kind of way. It's just this way. Letting go is letting go of the self-obsession in this particular mood, letting go of the desire to get rid of it, letting go of the indulgence in the storyline and narrative. So it's also letting be. So letting go is also full feeling. It feels this way. It's a very open state of mind. And then from that capacity, so that capacity comes from the vitality of being able to be present. And then from that vitality comes the capacity to begin to see to have a kind of sustained sense of presence, sustained sense of being present. And from that, you begin to understand your own consciousness, why you suffer, why you don't suffer. From that comes the capacity to let go and let be. And from that, you begin to experience the stillness of the consciousness, because the mind is no longer being fooled by these things, no longer distracted by them in these habitual ways. And it's not a kind of linear progression, you kind of go up and down, but that is a kind of pattern. Ajahn Chah would say that in the beginning, mindfulness is just a kind of like a drip of a tap, drip, 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 and then drip, 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 until it's a stream of attention. And that stream of attention, of presence and so on, doesn't mean that you're kind of really enjoying it, that it's just pleasant. It's just, no, now you're present with it. You have the vitality and experience and training and the kind of paramitas to do it. And as that kind of work progresses, then more and more you have a taste for stillness. And then I think the heart has more insight into who you are, your karma, your conditioning. And you don't get fooled so much by these things. You don't need to analyze them anymore. You don't need to think about it anymore. When I used to live here, there was a neighbor moved in down near Dennis's. And the neighbor put up a white picket fence. So picket fences, so you know, it has, when you look on a picket fence straight on, you can see what's in the yard, but when you walk on it sideways, you only see the blank wall of the fence. So I was walking along one day in this new fence, and as I got close to this fence, this German Shepherd jumped up and scared the wits out of me. Just jumped up on the fence and started snarling and barking, and I just jumped and ran. I was just so surprised by it. So the next day I went by, and now I knew what this was about. And as I approached it, it jumped up again, and I jumped again, but this time I didn't run. I walked quickly. And then it jumped up again, you know, and I just went through that for a few days until finally I could just stop and look at it. And then it settled down, it was okay. And that's kind of like a more long distance, is maybe the pattern of our conscious experience. It's some things that's just like, they just, you don't understand them and they fool you and you get overwhelmed by them. But as you watch, so this talking about my own fears or this friend's loneliness or whatever, after a while you just know, oh, that's just loneliness. Oh, that's just fear. It just feels that way. This is just fear. And it's not a problem. It's just a manifestation of nature. It has a bodily component, it has a verbal component, but it's not a problem. It's just the way it is. And then you see, that's just a movement, and you really appreciate, oh, the stillness of knowing. And that's more interesting than this movement. And the tendency to kind of have to do something about it, figure it out, analyze it, fix it, rearrange it. Why is this happening to me? All that begins to fall away. And it's just a movement, even if it's unpleasant. You just know it. So it's just a dog barking, not a problem. Because you know the picket fence there, it's okay. It's just a dog barking, just barking. And more there's a sense of equanimity around these kinds of conditions. And as that equanimity and mindfulness gets stronger, the contemplation becomes very, very simple, more like stillness. letting go. In a very simple language, not complicated. Listening. Non-becoming. Very simple. And that's the kind of self-coaching that you do. You just introduce little words that are really helpful just to bring you back to that insight. I used to do infinite patience, boundless compassion. Just bring that infinite patience, boundless compassion. And that's not an analytical thing, it's a suggestive. It's a suggestion. And so the suggestion is just bringing you back to something you already know, just as the connection to someone you love and you're friends with, you bring up their image, it connects you to something you already know. So also the language of stillness, it connects you to something that you've already seen and experienced, just stillness. And you begin to taste that and appreciate that. And then there's the stillness and the movement. So it kind of rather depends, you know, what's happening in your practice, where you're at, how long you've been at the game, and then so on. There's sort of different, the teachings are pitched to different, you know, different levels. So as I say, Ajahn Sumedho, when he started, he just said, let go, let go, let go, let go, let go, let go. His mind was so obsessed. But now if you talk with him, his mind dwells in the sound of silence very naturally. He goes to Heathrow Airport, it's all pandemonium, and he just dwells in the sound of silence, in emptiness, in that kind of emptiness. There's 45 years of work involved in that. And diligent, you know, diligent, sustained work. So you work from where you're at, and that kind of maturity. Okay, this is where it's at now. What can I do with this? What do I need to do? What kind of intelligence? Okay, let's do some sitting then.